children won't speak to their parents because they don't want to upset them, because the parents aren't talking about the person. But talking about the person and having open conversations is 10 times better than trying to pretend like it didn't even happen, because whether you talk about it or not, you're still feeling it, and we're still feeling it. And it's not going to get better. It's just going to keep on building that toxic feeling inside of your body until you can't keep it inside anymore, and you'll have a meltdown, or it'll just all come out. And being able to just talk to your family and to talk to someone that you trust or do something that you love is 10 times better than trying to pretend like it never happened.
Hello and welcome. My name is Liz Gleason, and you're listening to Shapes of Grief. Shapes of Grief is a curation of stories from international guests who share their unique experience of grief. These stories are shared with the wish that you, the listener, may find some comfort, hope, and solidarity, and maybe also the realization that you're not alone in your grief. Each time you listen, please do support the podcast by donating on the website shapesofgrief.com or by becoming a patron on patreon.com. It's a privilege to hold these conversations, and I extend my deepest gratitude to all my guests for showing up in this particular way. It truly is a gift. So welcome back to the Shapes of Grief podcast, everybody. I'm Liz Gleason, and today I'm joined by Sarah Corbett Lynch, a young author and possibly Ireland's youngest voice in advocating for children who are grieving. Sarah, you're very welcome.
I'm so happy to be here.
So I'm delighted to have received your book in the post this morning, and I do want to look into your book a little later and talk to you about the process of writing that book. But first of all, Sarah, let's begin with your story and why grief became a thing in your life. And it began very, very early in your life, didn't it, Sarah?
Yeah, it did. I lost my mom when I was 12 weeks old, so I never really got to know her. And I couldn't grieve about having to miss her, but I missed what I could have had with her. And then I lost my dad when I was 12, when I was 8. And that was really hard because it happened all very fast. And I moved back to Ireland with Tracy and David, who are now my earth parents, and my brothers, Adam, Jack, and Dean. And I've been living here ever since. And a few months ago, my Nana passed away due to COVID. And that was very hard because I didn't get to be with her. I hadn't seen her in a long time. So every time I've gone through grief, it's been a bit different.
You've had an unusual amount of grief for somebody so young, because you're 14, isn't that right, Sarah, in second year? Yeah. And I'm so sorry to hear about your granny. I know that's really recent, and that's a very fresh grief for you. And, you know, all these different types of losses you've mentioned, they are all so different, aren't they? The loss of your mom, who you can't remember, but you were aware that she wasn't there and what could have been. And then your dad's sudden and tragic death. Yeah. And then you had to move. You say you moved back home, so you were living in America.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Do you remember, Sarah, that time? What was that like for you?
It was very scary at first because I wasn't really aware of everything that was going on. And it was difficult not having my family just to talk to. But I remember when I saw Tracy and David, it was a lot easier for me because I knew straight away that I had them to talk to and with help me with my grief. And at the time I didn't know, but Tracy was, you know, doing equine therapy with me and music and drama and all different things that I'd never knew until, you know, in the last couple of years. And all of those things helped me so much through what I was going through.
So even though you didn't specifically know the intention behind those actions, she did.
Yeah.
And she was very intentionally getting you all the support you needed.
So something you said there really jumps out at me. You said it was so scary because, I'm paraphrasing, it was scary because I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think this is really something that's very common for children who are grieving. People try to protect them and don't tell them sometimes what's going on, but that can cause a lot more fear. So what was it like for you when you began to put pieces together and people did tell you in age-appropriate words what was going on? Was that more of a shock for you, or was it a relief for you to be told what was happening?
Well, it was a bit of a shock at first, because when I was that young, I didn't really know, I didn't understand, I couldn't grasp that my dad was gone and that he wasn't coming back. And when I was that young, I thought that, you know, it'll get easier as you get older. But for me, it hasn't. It's gotten harder for me because I know more about it and I understand. But my parents have really helped me because I've been able to express my grief in so many ways. And I've been able to understand how I'm feeling and why I'm feeling this way, which is very, it's harder to grieve and it's harder to try and still live your life when you're not knowing what's going on. And when you have someone there, like my family, for me to be able just to speak to them and just to have a cry about it, because that always lifts the load, or, you know, do something together, even if it's a, you know, a fun thing to do, it's always something that's helped me so much.
So when you talk about your parents now, and I love that you said my earth parents.
Yeah.
Does that mean you have heavenly parents too? Is that how
I do? I have my heaven parents, Jason and Mags, and then I have my earth parents, Tracy and David.
And you're, for anybody listening and not watching, Sarah is beaming from ear to ear and pure shining when she talks about them. How lucky were you to fall into the arms of people who loved you so deeply, Sarah?
There's no words to even explain how lucky I was. I was so afraid, and there's a feeling when I hugged Tracy, and I remember the feeling of just utter relief, because I knew I was safe straight away. And when I came home to this house, there's a smell that's our family smell. And that is always, every time I go on holidays, or every time, even if I go to the shop and I come home, I have the smell. I'm like, I'm home, I'm safe, I'm happy.
Yes, isn't that fabulous? So Sarah, going back to America, and you said your dad died suddenly, and recently your granny died of COVID, and you'd a little bit of warning. Would you say that there's quite a difference between when, you know, and I'm thinking to the kids who are listening to this, who maybe have lost a parent who's died suddenly as well. You know, in whatever way, there's many ways we can die suddenly. And it's not the same. Would you agree with that? That when we lose someone suddenly and tragically and unexpectedly, it's very different. I'm not saying it's worse or it's better, but it's very different to when someone has been ill for a while and we've anticipated their loss.
It is very different because you're not expecting it. So for me, the grief kind of started like maybe a week or two after my dad passed away, because it was such a shock, I couldn't understand. Whereas when my Nana passed away, you kind of, in the days leading up to it, you start to grieve before she's even gone. And that was really hard because I was sad and I just wanted to be with her, but I couldn't because of COVID. And the thing about that, I had my whole family with me through that. So it was really a surprise when my dad passed away, which made it a big difference.
I'm thinking, Sarah, of a friend of mine whose little niece has just lost her dad suddenly and tragically. And I'm imagining that girl, she's 12 years old, listening to you talking today. And I'm imagining her having a whole set of feelings that are confusing and conflicting and very big. You know, sometimes our grief can feel so big, we can think, how does this even fit inside me? Would you talk a little bit about, when you mentioned grief, what was that? What is grief? How does it manifest in your body, in your thoughts, in your feelings? Would you give a little picture of what the landscape of grief was like for you?
Profound loss can rock our inner world. It's confusing, life-altering, and often scary. You've probably already figured out that there are no stages of grief. But are there other models, theories, tools, or practices that can help us to navigate the grieving process? To learn more, visit shapesofgrief.com. As Liz says, the more people who are grief-trained, the more supportive and compassionate our society will be. And that will make life so much better for anyone coping with loss and grief. Now, let's get you back to the podcast.
So that somebody else who might be listening can go, it's not just me.
Yeah, well, when I first found out what grief was, I had heard about a woman who had died of cancer, and she had kids. She had a good few kids as well. And that kind of made me realize that I wasn't the only person out there that had lost a parent. And I found out about the 7 stages of grief, which I was like, okay, so this is going to happen this time and this time and this time. And then I remember having a conversation with Tracy, and we just talked about it. And then I realized that the 7 stages don't happen on the right time. You could be angry one day, and then you could be in denial the next day. And it's so many different feelings put together. And, you know, it's very hard, but, you know, if there is any kids listening out there, I am living proof that you can and you will, as long as you keep working to become a good person and to better yourself, that you will be okay. And grief never goes away, but you're able to live with it and, you know, to be happy.
And I think that's it's a lovely message to give. And even just minding yourself is enough, isn't it? You know, even just minding yourself in your grief. You've yet again made some really good points here, that there are no stages to grief. And that's not, it was never actually meant to be for grief, the woman who developed that. It was meant to be for people who'd learned they were going to die. They kind of went through denial and bargaining and, you know, whatever they are. But you're dead right. There's no stages to grief at all. You can feel many feelings at the same time and in the same day. Anger, joy, sadness, happiness, all of it can be there mixed up together. And there's there's no linear process or no formula for grief.
No.
What else would you describe your grief was like? I'm thinking, Sarah, of a lot of people say that children grieve very differently to adults. So they call it, when children grieve, puddle grief, that children sort of like have a bout of grief, express what they're feeling, and then run and play with their friends and be great for the rest of the day until another puddle of grief comes. Was that the case for you, or did you experience it differently?
I don't really know. I think everybody experienced grief in a different way. And for me, losing my dad was very hard because he was my soccer coach and I did spend a lot of time with him. So it was hard. And I think that for me, learning about other people's stories helped me when I was going through my own grief, because it made me feel less alone and made me be able to understand that, you know, I wasn't alone out there and that I had my family as well, who just always helped me.
Yeah, and another great point for all of us, I think, at any age, but particularly children, because you mightn't have had so much exposure to grief as adults have, to meet other people who've had a similar experience is really important. It's not just me. Because sometimes children can think it's my fault or it's something I did or it's just my family. Would you say something about that, Sarah? Did you have those feelings?
Well, I never had the my fault kind of thing, but I did. It was different for me because when my dad passed away, a lot of people knew about it, and it was hard to keep it just like a family, you know. But I think that the what you said about the puddle grief, I think that that does happen, you know. Even if we're, you know, my dad will come up in a conversation that we're having every once in a while, and then, you know, we'll have a little cry about it. But then a few minutes later, this happened this morning. We ended up talking about, you know, how my brother kept on stealing my toilet paper, you know. So it really does. Having the conversations that have my dad in it can be really happy. And we think of all the great memories about them. And then, you know, we have the ones where we have a little cry, but it's all positive when it comes to that type of stuff for me, because when I cry, I'm lifting a load from my shoulders. And when I'm laughing and learning about my dad and all the memories and thinking of all the things that we did together, it's also such a great thing to be able to express with my family.
Yeah. And you kind of come to that, don't you, Sarah? Like, it's hard, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the early days, memories can just bring a lot of pain and grief. But as your grief evolves with time, the memories become more joyful. As time goes by, you know, I think when people say, what's the objective of grief work? I think that is one of the primary objectives for many people. It's, I want to be able to remember them with love and with joy rather than this pain. And yeah. I think in the early days, it can be painful. But it's lovely to hear you say that 6 years on, you're laughing about him and remembering the love and remembering the joy.
I think having open and honest conversations with your family and, you know, just being there for each other is a great thing to have with your family. And also, I think counseling is an amazing way to help yourself feel better, because I know that a lot of people would be ashamed to go to counseling. But the way I think about it is, if you go to the doctor because you're physically hurt, the doctor helps you, and you would never be ashamed to say, I went to the doctor. Whereas if you go to counseling, someone is helping you with your mental health or your mind. And it is the same thing as going to the doctor if you hurt your knee. And I don't think that there's anything to be ashamed about it. And I know a lot of people would be or are, and that's something that I've always been very like, I think that it's a great thing and that it helps.
I would love to learn more about this, Sarah, because I know a lot of listeners are counselors and psychotherapists, and I would love to know what helps you in counseling. Like, what is it about your counselor that, because you told me the other day you've been with the same person for quite some time.
Yeah.
What is it about that space that gives you that holding and that trust and that belief in counseling as a really useful tool?
Well, I think that I have an amazing counselor, and because I've been with her for so long, there's a real trust there. And when I go in, I just tell her everything, and I'd have a cry. I know before I even go in that that's going to happen. But I just telling, and for me, I write things down or I'd talk to Tracy or my counselor, and it's all different ways. Like, me and Tracy like to call it a little tool shed that you have in your mind if you're ever upset or you ever just feel like you have too much emotions bottled up. Just to either, for me, I'd pick singing one day and I'd sing, or, you know, I'd have a conversation with Tracy. And there's so many different ways that people can find to express their feelings if they don't feel like just talking about it. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, so important. And you and I have talked about this before. And, you know, I think we need to do new research on children and grief, because a lot of our understanding about how children grieve and their understanding about death at different ages is from quite a long time ago. And I think nowadays it's very different. I think children are becoming more emotionally intelligent quicker and earlier because they've such exposure, you know, to TikTok or Instagram or whatever. And we're reading stories all the time about lots of different life events, and people are sharing their emotions a lot more online, maybe not in person. Yeah. So I think we need to really revisit what children understand about death and grief and how we work with them.
I definitely agree with you, because I think a lot of people see children as, oh, they don't know what it is, or they don't know, they don't feel grief. Whereas we do feel it. We may not understand all of it, but we still feel it, and it's still there. And it, because we don't understand what it is or what the feeling is, it kind of makes it even harder, because we don't know how to express how we feel, and that can show up in our moods, our behavior. And that's something that a lot of people, I think, misunderstand, that children still feel it. Just because they don't understand, we still know what it feels like.
Yeah. And can you describe what it feels like, Sarah?
There's, for me, it's a lot of different emotions, and it feels like there's some sort of something inside of you that wants to get out, but you don't know how. So that's why I've picked singing and dancing and acting, because I can, when I'm singing, I can just sing so loud that it's almost like I'm screaming. And for dancing, I get to use my body in a way that I can put all my pressure on my, let's say, my hands, instead of having this feeling of it can be emptiness one day, or it can be so like a ball of just energy. And I think that a lot of people get that as well. I don't think that it's just me. And there's so many ways that people can have their own little tool shed.
But what you're essentially saying is that these emotions, when they build up, they need expression.
They do.
You know, whether it's through singing or movement or, you know, they need expression. How do you think movement or singing, dance, or any of these things helps you?
Well,
afterwards, like what changes?
Well, I feel like a lot of the time I do these with Tracy because it's just something that we've always done. But in my heart, I feel like I'm letting go of whatever is inside of me that is, I don't want to be there. And it helps me to feel some sort of relief. And for me, dancing and singing and acting is just, I've always loved to express my emotions in that way. I love singing, acting, dancing, all those things anyways. So it's doing something that I love to help myself.
I love that you found that. So I want to rewind a little to something you said when, you know, and just to recap, when you were 12 weeks old, your mom died. And then at a later stage, your dad moved to the States and you and your brother went with him. When you were 8, your dad died suddenly and tragically. And there was a period of time that you weren't able to get at your family. So that was a really difficult time. But then Tracy and David came and got you and your brother and brought you from the States back to Ireland. And you said that in those early days, you didn't know it at the time, but Tracy was getting you out on horses and doing all sorts of things with you. Will you tell me a little bit about those days and what you remember? One of my guests 2 weeks ago, Adrienne, talks about doing a grief group in her barn with the horses. So it's really interesting that you're talking about horses now in your grief. I'd love to learn more about that.
Well, I've always loved horses because when I was very young, me and my dad went on a walk on the beach and we saw these jockeys running past us. And I just thought it was amazing. And ever since then, I've loved horses. And then when I got home, me and Tracy, we signed up to a horse riding place. So I was there for a good while, and it's just, it was a way of just, you know, doing something that I was happy about and wanted to do to get rid of all my negative energy. Because I, in my heart, there was anger and there was sadness and there was just a lot of tension and frustration and confusion. And being able to put that sort of pressure out of my body in ways that helps me be happy. Like, in a way, whenever, you know, you do the deep breath, like, I think of, you know, blue skies in, gray skies out. And that was kind of the way that we did it. And I'm so grateful to my family for just being there for me and doing, taking the time to do all the fun stuff that I love to make me feel happy. So I think that everybody has something that they can do to make themselves feel better and to get those blue skies again. And grief is not going to go away. And I'm not saying it will get easier, but you'll be able to live your life. And because the person that you lost is won't be happy if you're not happy and you're not living your life and, you know, to the fullest. And I think that you should live your life, because when you lose someone, it seems like the whole world stops. And I think it is very important to make sure that, yes, it's hard, it's going to be hard, but to make sure that you don't lose all of your opportunities or not do things that you love as well, just because you feel like, because the person that you love is gone, that you shouldn't be happy.
Really, really good point, Sarah. What you're saying is grief is always there in some shape, but you can also have happiness living alongside it, and you can have moments of pure joy despite the grief being there all the time.
Yeah.
But again, important to say that in the early days, the grief can feel really unmanageable and unbearable, and that doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
For most people, that does not last forever. It gets more manageable. But it's there. It's important to acknowledge it's there. We talked about this briefly earlier, Sarah, how grief changes as you get older and as your understanding changes, your understanding changes as you get older. Where are you now? You're 14 years old. When you look back, are you still trying to make sense of everything, or do you find that you have your story, you know what's happened, you know what you need to manage it, and you're looking forward to your future and all the things that lie ahead for you? Or where are you in the process?
Well, I think that I'm always gonna, you know, miss my dad and everything, and I'm always gonna have that grief with me. But I know my story, and I know the person that I am and the family that I have. And for me, I always love to write and everything like that. So that's always gonna be in my life. And I am excited for the future, and I'm excited for the present as well.
So you're enjoying your day-to-day life as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned something and I keep thinking of it. You said your dad was your football coach, and I know you lived in America, and in America football is a very big deal, because I have two nieces over there, and my very unsporty brother was dragged into being football coach as well. What was Jay like as a football coach?
He was amazing. He was my football coach and my baseball coach, and I remember he'd bring ice pops to every game, because if we won, it was a treat. But if we lost, it was something to make us feel better because we tried so hard. So that's something that I always remember. And I have this photo of me playing, me kicking the ball, and you can see him in the background, and he just looks so like proud and so focused. And it's just a nice way to remember my dad, because it's just something I loved to do with him. And even when I used to do swimming, I remember I did a stroke wrong. And I remember going up to him crying, saying, I did it wrong. I'm going to lose. And then he was like, you did great. You did the hardest stroke and everyone else was doing the easiest, and you didn't lose. And I just remember laughing about that. And I always have those amazing memories about him.
Ah, so what was he like as a dad, Sarah?
He was amazing. He just made everything seem bright and happy. And whenever I was sad, he'd make me laugh straight then and there, and then I was happy again. And no matter how sad he was, he'd put on a smile and make me laugh, and he'd do everything to make me happy and to make Jack happy.
You felt good with him.
Yeah.
Do you feel him in you or with you or beside you nowadays? Where is he for you?
He's definitely in my heart, and every time I see a red robin, I always think of my dad, because it's just something that you think of. And white butterflies, whenever I see them, I think of my mom, my dad, or my nana. And that's something that our whole family, but it's really his memory will be in my mind and in my heart.
Hmm. And would you say a little bit about your mom as well? I know you don't have any memories yourself, but have you heard stories about her from your family? And what sort of a woman was she?
Well, from what I know, she just seems like a really genuine, like, amazing person. And I know from Tracy and David that my parents were always happy together, and that they were always, you know, they were great people. And from my parents now, I know that they were, because my parents that I have now are amazing people, and the same with my heaven parents as well.
I love that you feel them close to you.
We found a videotape as well of my mom and my dad, of when me and Jack, when I was just born and Jack was like only a year old, and just the smiles and the laughs that we had watching it, seeing my dad come home from a work trip and my brother running into him, well, waddling, but my dad picking him up and giving him presents and saying, giving my mom a present, and when she was pregnant with me. And there was just, it was really nice to watch, just to see how they were together, and the laughs we had when we watched it was just so nice.
So you were born into a lot of love, Sarah, it sounds like.
Yeah, it definitely was.
I can see it in you. I'm looking here at your book, and I'd love to bring attention to your book, Noodles Loses Dad. And I see you're planning a series of books.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about the book and the process of writing this book. Whose idea was it? Why did you decide to do it? And what was it like doing it?
Well, for me, I wrote the book just because for my grief. And it wasn't supposed to be a book. I just wrote a story that was helping me to process how I was feeling. And then I showed it to Tracy and David, and they were like, wow, this is really good. And I really wanted to publish it, because I wanted everybody out there, all the children out there, to have something to fall back on and to know that they're not alone. And after a little while of saying, please, we decided to self-publish, because
you've got that tone perfect. There's some tone in there that a parent can't refuse, I think.
Yeah.
So Tracy and David agreed to publish the book. What was that like for you?
Well, I was really excited. I was just over the moon, because I really wanted to be able to help other people. And we decided to self-publish because they wanted me to learn the ways of how to do them on my own. And we wanted to do it as a family as well. So we published the book, and it was amazing. And there was so many orders coming in, and it was just, we had me and my brother Adam were doing all of the invoicing together. David was running them to different places, and Tracy was helping. We were all doing loads of stuff, and it was really a nice kind of family thing to do as well. And I got amazing feedback. There was this one little girl who texted me from her mom's phone saying that she felt less alone, and that really made me think, if there is only one person out there who I've helped, it's worth it. But I got loads of other stuff from many different people saying that they felt less alone, or they understood how the book helped them. And I remember reading my book in a creche. It was actually the creche that my mom used to own. And now my godmother owns. And it was so interesting for me because I had seen my family's reaction and I had seen my, you know, my friend's reaction, but I didn't see the children's reaction. And the questions were like, how was Noodle? Because I said Noodle was a part of both of the families. And there were so many questions, and it was really interesting for me to see that they understood and that they liked the book as well. So it was an amazing experience for me.
Absolutely. And I think you've been on TV a few times and on different radio interviews and stuff, have you?
Yeah, I have. I was on The Late Late Show, which was amazing. And I was on...
Hi, Ryan Tuberty, isn't he?
He's lovely. I was on his radio show and I was on his The Late Late Show. And I've met him before because Tracy was also on The Late Late Show. So that was amazing. And I remember going back to school the day after and all my friends coming up to me, you know, it was really cool. And going on to that platform, I know that there's so many people watching, that there's somebody watching on the other side of the screen that has gone through hard times or is going through hard times, and that me speaking about it could help them. And same on all the radio shows, because people don't just go up and start talking about it a lot. And it's kind of a unspoken rule, I think, that people don't talk about death, but it's the same as when you're born and the same, you will die eventually. And it's something that a lot of people are afraid of and don't want to talk about. But I think if you talk about it from a young age as something that isn't scary, it makes life a lot better.
Yeah, definitely. I've loads of questions for you just from that little piece you've said there. And one of them is about the way we don't talk about death or grief. And the other one is about getting used to death as part of life when we're young. And, you know, I remember being away in France a couple of years ago with an Israeli friend. And while we were away, her daughter's rabbit died, was killed by a fox. And she was on this frantic search for an identical rabbit to replace the dead rabbit so that her daughter wouldn't know. And I was saying, please just let her learn about loss. You know, when she's six, the children need to have pets that die, need to have goldfish that die, you know, need to have cats that run away, because this is all these little losses help prepare us for the big losses, right? But yeah. She was insistent she was going to protect her child. And I think this is where adults do a big, and children actually, do a big disservice to other people. Actually, you know what, Sarah? It's not even just children or adults and adults. I think adults don't talk to children about grief because they don't want to upset them. And adults don't talk to adults about grief either for the same reason. But actually, you feel it in the air when it's not being talked about, don't you?
It's like the elephant in the room. And it's something that a lot of people do. And I know that children won't speak to their parents because they don't want to upset them, because the parents aren't talking about the person. But talking about the person and having open conversations is 10 times better than trying to pretend like it didn't even happen, because whether you talk about it or not, you're still feeling it and we're still feeling it. And it's not going to get better. It's just going to keep on building that toxic feeling inside of your body until you can't keep it inside anymore, and you'll have a meltdown, or it'll just all come out. And being able to just talk to your family and to talk to someone that you trust or do something that you love is 10 times better than trying to pretend like it never happened. For me, I remember being really afraid, and even like now, if I hear an ambulance, I still get scared, and that's something I'm just gonna have to live with. And I know that everybody has something that they're gonna have to live with, because grief does change you, because it's a big thing that happens in your life. And for me, I remember a lot of people didn't see my family as a family because we are blended family. Whereas straight away when I came home, this is my parents, these are my brothers, and I love them no matter what. And even people who used to be in my close circle thought that we weren't a real family. And that was the really hardest thing for me because I love my family more than anything in the world. And I think a lot of people that are going through grief feel their pain, but they don't understand that they're hurting others because they don't know how to express their own.
Very often it's like if we've never learned to sit with our own grief, it's almost impossible to sit with somebody else's. And it's really interesting you talk about this because it was going to be my next question. I was going to ask you about your peers and your friends because, you know, we know in grief when, as adults anyway, when someone we love dies and we're grieving, all of our friendships change. Some of them deepen and some of them disappear. And you hear people say time and time again, the people I thought would be there and really supportive aren't, some are. And then other people just came out of nowhere and were there every day and they were amazing. And now they're really good friends.
I'm wondering
how you navigate friendship when you're dealing with 14-year-old kids who, you know, the troubles of a 14-year-old can be quite different to the troubles you've gone through in your life, Sarah. And you've been forced to grow and you've been forced to sort of grow emotionally to hold your grief. And you've been forced to grow psychologically to hold your grief and make sense of it, you know, and to get this depth that I hear from you of your person. You've such depth, you're gorgeous. I'd love to go out and have dinner with you and chat about life. And but most 14-year-olds, I have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old who've had tough times in their lives. So they're a little bit similar too. But the mainstream isn't. The mainstream is talking about TikTok and who's curling their hair and all that. And that's important stuff too. But how do you navigate that when you're living and dwelling a lot of the time in this whole other deep life, if you like? How do you manage the superficiality?
Well, for me, it was always, I have my family first, and then for me with my friends, it was just, I know that they're there for me because for me, I don't want to be talking about how I feel all the time when it comes to my friends. I just want to hang out and have some fun. But when I do come onto the subjects, my friends don't go like, they don't freeze because they know that I need them just to have a conversation. And I know that a lot of people just freeze and they don't know what to say. Or they just say, I'm sorry, because there's nothing else to say. They don't understand. And I feel like a lot of people can't empathize what they don't understand. And a lot of people will give you sympathy, which is, I don't really understand why people do, because sympathy is like looking down and saying, oh, sorry. You know, whereas empathy is you go down that ladder and you go down there and say, I know how you feel and I feel it too, you know, and they're always there for you. And my friends have been there 100% of the way.
I think that, you know, that's such a beautiful example, Sarah. And it's a mistake that many people trying to support those who are grieving make. So it's like when we're grieving and we're in that pit of grief, people kind of look down over the edge and go, hey, it's not so bad. Come on back up here. Hey, it's a sunny day, or I'm sure you'll be fine. Or they completely invalidate the fact that you're in this pit and don't have a choice. You can't get out when you're deeply grieving. And the joy of having someone, like you say, climb down the ladder and just sit with you and say, this sucks and I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Let me hold you and just be with you and put up with your snot and your tears and whatever you need to do right now.
Yeah.
And then paradoxically, sometimes we can climb out of the pit when we've got someone who does that with us.
It's so much easier to have someone to climb down there and talk to you and just be there with you. And once you have that cry and you lift the load that you need, you can climb out of the pit and go and have some fun. And you might end up right back in the pit again a few weeks later, but you know that you have that person that will always climb down and be there for you.
What would you say to the adults or the children who think, oh, I don't want to ask her about her mom or her dad because I don't want to upset her?
I would say, if you want to ask, ask, but make sure that they're not. It depends on really the timing for me, because I think that if you ask them straight up and you just kind of want to know because you want to go gossip about it, don't ask, because it's none of your business. But if you're a friend or you're someone who really cares about this person and you want to just be there for them, ask them, because it might be what they need. They might need someone to ask them so that they can just talk about it and have the cry that they need. So it really, it kind of depends on what you're going to do with that information.
And yet again, Sarah, you've come up with a really, really important point. For a lot of people who are grieving, they really want to hear their loved one's name. So do you miss Jay, or do you miss your dad, or how are you feeling? Do you want to talk about him? Which is really different to what happened and then what happened. And then, you know, which is just information seeking and looking, like you say, for a story or for drama. They're two really different intentions there, isn't there?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, like, don't be looking for the story, but yeah. Do ask me how I feel about my grief and my dad. And
yeah, when you're grieving, and for me, when I was grieving, it was very open about what had happened to my dad. So we had a lot of people who just wanted to know. And that was hard, because I like to see the best in everyone. I like to know that everybody's, you know, they're there for me, but it's not reality. Whereas I know that I have like my 10 people that I can always go to no matter what situation I'm in, and that they'll be there for me and they'll climb down the hole with me. Yeah. And I think you have to be, in a way, a little bit cautious about who you're talking to, because you're already in such a hurtful kind of place deep down, that if you get hurt again, it can be so much harder. And I think that if you're going to talk to someone, make sure that you know the person, that you know that they're doing it for good intentions.
Yeah. And this is yet again another brilliant point you're making here. You're talking about discernment, and you're saying, because your dad died so tragically and suddenly and publicly, that was a whole other layer for you of, who can I trust? Who's got our best intentions at heart? Who's just wrapped up in the story? And I think for others too, certainly with adults I work with, they have to learn, you know, we kind of automatically say, talk about grief and talk about loss and be open. But actually a little bit of discernment is really good, because not everybody can hold your precious story. And you've to make sure, I think, that the people you share with are able to hold your story and hold your experience and hold your emotions with you. Because it can be really hurtful when you share and then it's not held in trust, or, you know, it's not safe in some way.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I know that there's a lot of people out there, and they might not be doing it for anything to try and hurt you, but, you know, they want to know what happened just so that they can go and talk to maybe just their one friend or something like that. But it's still, they're not doing it because they want to help you, or they might sympathize, but you know, you'll know that this person is being there for you to help you. Yeah. If they talk to you, and they may not ask about what happened. They may just want to talk about the person, or even just sit down quietly with you, or just listen to music with you. There's so many different ways that you can just be there for someone instead of having to talk about the specific details.
Yeah, I agree. I really agree. So Sarah, you were just got your life back together and reestablished with this new family, your Earth family. And it sounds like you've had wonderful support. And then this blooming pandemic hits and your granny is one of the people who died during the pandemic. Would you talk a little bit about that? Because this is so, there's so many people experiencing this kind of grief and the complications that came with it as well, of not being able to see them. And earlier you alluded to anticipatory grief, which is the grieving we do when we're waiting for somebody to die.
Yeah, losing my Nana was really hard because I would have been close enough to her. And having to see her in hospital and not, you know, her happy, smiley person was kind of heartbreaking for everyone. But I like to remember her, how happy and nice, the amazing person that she was. I remember I used to go into her after school and she'd brush my hair with a little comb, a little orange comb. And I'd come in with my hair so frizzy and I'd come out looking amazing. And I could never make my hair look like that. And it was always just like, how do you do that? Do you know? Yeah. And we'd color together and she made the best dinners ever. Her bacon and cabbage was spot on, you know, and I'd only ever drink tea at her house. So it's always just, I have so many amazing memories of my Nana and that's really special to me. And for my whole family, it was hard because I know that Tracy was really close to my Nana and she left work to be with my Nana. And we went into her and we washed her hair for her and she spent all the time that she had with her. So I am really happy that we had the time before the pandemic hit, that we had that time with her. And that's very important to me. But I will say that for all the people out there who have lost someone in the pandemic, it's been very hard because even at the funeral, there's only 10 people. And I have a big family and there's 7 of us just in my immediate family. So that's very hard. And not being able to see the person or just hold her hand was probably one of the hardest things.
I'm so sorry you had that experience. You're probably still feeling it so fresh today because it's only been a few months. Yeah. Well, Sarah, you've shared such wisdom today, and I hope that many, many children listening will learn from you. And I also hope that many adults listening will learn from you. Is there anything you'd like to say just as a final message about children and grief and really what we need to know?
Well, I would say that for anybody out there, adult or child, that, you know, have open, honest conversations and listen to what we have to say. And listen and don't sympathize. Please don't sympathize because it really doesn't help. Empathy is the best way to help somebody to go down. Maybe you need to share something that happened to you, but being with the person, you don't even have to talk about what happened. Just being with the person, holding them and being there for them is the best thing you can possibly do to help the person that you love.
It's wonderful. And I have this image as you're speaking of somebody coming in alongside you rather than talking down to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great advice. Great counsel. Sarah, I assume you're not going to grow up and be a banker or an economist or a solicitor. What is your plan?
Well, I have so many dreams, but I really want to be an actress because it's always been like my favorite thing. So I love expressing myself through acting and I love singing and dancing, which will come with that. So it's so broad with acting that there's so many things that I can do that I love. So that's what I want.
And, you know, I think one of the most important qualities for an actor is to be able to empathize. And because of your life experience, you know that pit pretty well, don't you? So I can imagine you'd have a really broad range and you'd truly be able to empathize with many characters
and what you're
going through.
And recently I got an agent as well, Annette, who's been amazing, and I'm just really excited.
Well, I wish you the very best. You deserve it. You really deserve the very best, Sarah. And I wish you well as you navigate your grief through the rest of your teenage years. I love that your mom and dad are in your heart and in heaven, and you've got them very close by. And I love that you have such amazing earth angels taking care of you, earth parents. And I really wish you the very best, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Shapes of Grief. This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical or psychological advice. And if your grief is making you unwell, please do see your healthcare provider. Once again, please consider supporting the podcast by donating on shapesofgrief.com or becoming a patron on patreon.com. I rely on your support to keep going. The music is performed by Baka Beyond, especially for the Shapes of Grief podcast. Until the next time, from me, Liz Gleeson, take really good care. She has come down to condemn
absolutely gorgeous.